Hi, I'm Marcus Jones, Chief Digital Officer at Premier, which produces this podcast and many others. Like you, I love listening to these amazing podcasts. I also love hearing about the people who are impacted by them, like Sheila from Cheshire. Sheila's parents were both sick and she was going through a difficult time taking care of them. But she started listening to Premier's podcasts and God spoke to her through them with just the right thing she needed to hear at just the right moment. She felt reassured that God had it in hand and that her parents would be safe. It's incredible to know how important these podcasts are to so many, but they are listener funded, which means we need your support to keep them going for people like Sheila. This week, we come to the end of our financial year with our funding need yet to be met. Would you consider a donation today to help us reach more people like Sheila with hope and encouragement through our podcasts? Give your gift today at premier.plus/donate. That's premier.plus/donate. Thank you.
The Leadership File on Premier.
Welcome to the show that aims to help you change the way you lead. I'm Andy Peck. Most churches would include discipleship somewhere in their mission or purpose statements. Some churches are good at helping others come to faith, some at helping them mature, and others at helping those who are mature become disciple makers themselves. But very few churches have a system that helps people through each of these stages. Well, as a part of a series of looking at this, we talked to Steve Fenning, the senior leader of Forge Community Church at Stowmarket in Suffolk. So welcome, Steve, to the Leadership File.
Hi, thanks, Andy.
For those of you who aren't familiar with Suffolk and Stowmarket, just locate it for us.
Okay, it's in the centre of East Anglia. It's about 80 miles north of London.
Okay, that's splendid. Good.
Yeah.
And obviously, for overseas listeners, they're no London. So
yes.
So
was it is in the middle of nowhere. There's lots and lots of small villages. Basically.
Yes, that's right. Yeah. Thank you. Yeah. So was discipleship part of the DNA of the church when you arrived?
Absolutely, it was. It wasn't when I arrived. In that I was involved in starting the church 24 years ago. And yes, I mean, I grew up with that whole understanding of go and make disciples, the commission of Jesus. So when we started very small, and we were just really hungry to grow. There was about 24 of us, and so we were very relational. We had a heart to reach out to our local community. We wanted to teach the Bible in a practical way. And I think if discipleship is about us becoming more like Jesus, then that has to include sharing Jesus' heart for seeing lost people found. And so, yes, right at the very start, discipleship in the wider context was the driving force of starting the church.
Oh, splendid. And you talked about the start then. How have things progressed? Describe the church for us today.
Yeah, sure. So as I said, it started 24 years ago. There were 24 of us that started to meet in what is my home village, a village called Mendlesham, which is about 1,000 people. And basically, over those 24 years, it's grown to now meet in two villages, a village called Debenham and another one called Thurston. And so basically, we're one church, but we cover at the moment two locations, and we look to launch another location in another village in Suffolk next year. So now we have about 450 people attending across both of our locations. Our church is based around our mission, which is transforming lives. We want to help people to find and follow Jesus and helping those in need. And I think one of the reasons why we've seen growth within our village context is that we've tried to be a church that people who don't normally go to church love to be a part of. And so we gear our Sunday services towards that, even our groups. We're involved in our local community. We're involved in giving short-term experiences of mission abroad as well. So it's a very active church, as I said, that's been running now for 24 years.
And from what you say, it sounds like the language of seeker targeted type activity. Is that part of your DNA?
Yes, absolutely it is. We tend not to use the term seeker seeker targeted. We were heavily influenced by Bill Hybels and Willow Creek many years ago, and that really inspired me. So the church wasn't just for us Christians. We wanted church to be for those that we're trying to reach. And so, heavily influenced by that.
Right, good. So if I'm a newcomer to the church, what might be the kind of entry point for me? You talked about the growth. What would have been the places that people have found attraction?
Yeah, sure. Entry points could be all over the place, really. So an entry point might be us being involved in the local community, maybe meeting a need of a family or something like that, either through helping with a hardship gift or through a furniture bank or food and that kind of thing. But on the whole, much of our growth has come through people inviting their friends. And so hence we gear our Sunday experience, our Sunday services, to be incredibly welcoming and accessible to visitors and people who wouldn't normally go to church. I think we use Alpha. Alpha has been massive for us in seeing people come to the church and come to faith. We also use another kind of introduction to faith called Starting Point, which is from North Point in the States. And actually what we've seen is more people come to church first, come to a service first, and then do Alpha, and then become Christians, than actually probably the other way around.
That's interesting. Is there something about village life that may be a factor there?
It could be. I just think, on the whole, though, it's relationships. It's built out of Christians having relationships with people who as yet don't know God or who might be searching, and then having roots in for those to invite with into the church community. Yeah.
So if I'm a newcomer to the church,
yep.
Exactly how do you help me come to faith? Is it through what we call the old style gospel presentation? Is it literature? Are you encouraging yep. people to gossip the gospel? What's the kind of things that might?
Yeah, I mean, I would say that we would have seen hundreds more really are coming to faith, and I would say that probably the majority of those would ultimately be through Alpha, or that Alpha played a significant part in that. And so on Sundays, on occasions, we would encourage people to take that step, but we wouldn't do that every week. But we would always talk to people who as yet wouldn't call themselves Christians within our talks, and so we would make reference to them, we would talk directly to them, and inviting them to engage, inviting them to be a part of a small group or to be a part of Alpha or Starting Point. That's for us, that's just proved to be a really good way. So it's out of relationship, but it's having pathways then for that relationship to go further.
Well, certainly one of the challenges many church leaders find is that that folk come to faith through Alpha, but the actual next stage of what you might call becoah a mature believer, whatever's meant by
sure.
that's the challenge. And it's how long's a piece of string at one level,
but yep.
what kind of time frame do you think in terms of someone who say come to faith through Alpha one week? Are we talking weeks, months, years? To talk about the kind of the time frames that you've been familiar
yeah.
with?
Sure. I think it varies hugely. And some of that just depends, I think, on the spiritual momentum of each individual, in that some will take a very tentative step, and each time they move forward, it will take time, it will take big courage for them to take another small step of faith. And others, it just seems that like the touch paper is lit and they're away and they fly. So we don't have a kind of a linear stage by stage. You do this course, you have to attend this,
right,
you have
right.
to be doing this. I just think because we're not all the same. And so therefore, I think it can really vary depending on, I think, that spiritual momentum within the life of a person.
Right, right. So some almost from day one they're sharing their faith, they're excited about their faith.
Oh goodness, absolutely.
And others, I could... it's a harder process. They're more private.
It is. Yeah. That's right. And some of that comes from the baggage of either previous church experience, if they've had any, or just stuff that's gone on in their lives. And so to start trusting people could be a massive first step, whereas others who can easily trust people can then move forward that much quicker. So I don't like the linear, you go from this to this to this to this. I think it has to be much more individual than that. Mm. So, but therefore, as a church, we have to create different environments for people to be able to access to take that next step. Okay.
So my next question was going to be, but I don't think it's going to work, is do you have a way of determining whether someone is ready to be a disciple maker themselves? And I suspect from that, from what you've said, you don't really do that.
No, I mean, I would say straight away, to become a disciple maker, once someone makes that commitment, they've got a story to share with a friend.
Yeah.
And that's, I don't just see discipleship is once they've become Christians. I see discipleship is as I think Jesus termed it, go and make disciples. That's not go and find Christians and make them more mature. I think that was to go out and to win people. So it's this whole process. If I have come to faith today, I've got a story to share and something to share with someone else. And as I learn something new, I can then share that too. So I would just say straight away, I think every Christian has to be a disciple maker. It might be inviting someone to church. It might be walking alongside them when they're hurting. It might be serving others. I just think discipleship is so relational. And it's this process, not a course or a linear pathway. And regarding the groups that we operate within the life of our church, we ask leaders to look out for apprentice leaders who can help them towards becoming future group leaders, where you're discipling or helping to disciple a bunch of 10 to 12 people. I think we always want to have this leadership stream running through wherever we kind of get a hint that actually someone could be helping a group of people to becoming more like Jesus.
Right. Is that some listeners will be familiar with 3DM, the St. Thomas Crook model of huddles, and that is that what you're describing there, or is it a kind of unique thing to your church?
No, I mean, within our groups, we run what we call 10-month groups, and literally they last for 10 months, and then people can sign up again. We want to try and make our groups as accessible for people to join and to find the right group as frequently as possible. So we run these groups for 10 months. But we also run other small groups, which we just call running mates, which are the life transformational groups, which is threes and fours, where people share a lot deeper personally and are held more accountable within those smaller groups. And so we would just encourage people to connect relationally, because honestly, I believe that if we connect relationally, we can grow spiritually. And so therefore, relationships are just so important.
Fantastic.
So important.
Well, you're listening to The Leadership File with me, Andy Peck. I'm joined this week by Steve Fenning, the senior leader of Forge Community Church, Stowmarket in Suffolk. We'll be back just after this. Welcome back to The Leadership File with me, Andy Peck. I'm joined this week by Steve Fenning, the senior leader of Forge Community Church, Stowmarket, Suffolk. He's very kindly allowing me to quiz him about how, as a church, they attract newcomers, seek to mature those people, and then help those mature people to become disciple makers themselves, something that's something of a challenge in many local churches. And you were stressing before the break, Steve, the key importance of relationship, that this is not a linear thing, it's not about courses, it's about people connecting with people and helping one another to grow. So that's really terrific.
Yeah, absolutely.
And I need to say, of course, that no church is textbook, so no doubt you've had challenges, false starts, disappointments along the way. You've been going, as you said, for 24 years, ups and downs, no doubt.
Absolutely. Oh, I mean, in a sense, we fail all the time, and we just have so much to learn. But I'll tell you, I and the leaders and folks within the church are just hungry to learn. I honestly am so passionate about seeing people come to faith and then to grow in faith and to then bring their friends to Jesus as well. That's honestly at the heart of who I am. So do we get it right all the time? Of course not. Absolutely not. But therefore, I want to keep learning, and I'm happy to take a risk and fail than just to try and play it safe. I think that's partly at the heart of what we do and why we don't always succeed. But I see our role as creating environments where people can connect relationally in order to grow spiritually, whether that's our Sunday services, whether it's our groups or courses. And even our Sunday services are just an environment that we can put, and we do put, an awful lot of effort into making that environment engaging and challenging. But to be honest, people can still not listen. They can still not engage and not grow. They could be part of a great group, but again, if they don't engage, they won't grow. And so, I just think leadership is hard. And we will have times where it doesn't work. But I think maturity comes through persevering through those times. Yeah. And so I think we would have let a lot of people down as a church. We would have hurt people. And I am desperately sad about that. And I think we've also really helped some people to grow and to flourish in faith. And kind of that's life.
Yes, indeed.
But I don't want to put people off. But inevitably that happens within families, doesn't it?
Yeah, sure. But it's great to hear your enthusiasm after 24 years of this. Clearly many churches do struggle, and many church leaders kind of give up. You know, they put on services, marriage, funerals. That's kind of the work of the ministry. But for many folk, they don't have that passion within. Is it because it's so hard, do you think, that people settle for something lesser?
Certainly. I think it is really hard work. And part of my responsibility as a leader is to make sure that I lead myself well. And I know that when there are times when I feel jaded and I can't be bothered, that affects the church. And so therefore, I have a huge responsibility on myself to find ways of being inspired and to be learning new things. But it is hard. And I think disappointment and hurt plays a huge part too, because I think lots of people will start with enthusiasm and it kind of gets beaten out of them. I tell you, church can be such a tough place, can't it? Especially when leaders want to do something that makes the congregation uncomfortable.
Yeah.
And it's normally through being uncomfortable that people grow. And so therefore, I think discipleship is really messy.
Yeah.
And if Jesus spent 3 years discipling the 12, it was certainly messy and painful for him, wasn't it?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Because one betrayed him, one denied him. They had arguments over who was the greatest. They wanted to call down fire and fry people. Do you know what I mean? And everything which would go against what Jesus would want. So he must have lived with a sense of disappointment and hurt. But that was his mission. His mission was to set up these guys to reach the world, to go and make disciples. And so so it is hard. It's very disappointing. It can be very discouraging. But I tell you, whenever you get a win, whenever I get a win, boy, do I want to celebrate that. And so I'll email it out. I'll include it in talks because that's what keeps me going.
Yeah.
That's what keeps me going.
Well, it's great to hear. And, I'm struck by how local churches often they have the folk like yourself who are enthusiastic and buoyant, and then there's seems to be often a layer of folk who prefer to, as it were, remain at school. So they don't want to take responsibility. So they stay stuck a little bit. I'm just wondering if you find this in within the networks that you work.
Oh, of course, of course. We have such a mixed bunch of people who a part of the forge, and so we will have those who are on fire and are just wanting to give everything. We have others who put up with church and are happy to be part of church, but that's as far as it goes. And we have those that are seeking. So yeah, church is just such a messy place, isn't it? But I do think that fear affects us all, and change and responsibility is costly, and so naturally, I think people at times will just step back from that. And I understand that. I ain't going to go in be critical in that. I just think that people are at different stages. But I do find that inevitably, unless we keep an outward focus, people can easily want to make their faith about themselves. It's what they want, what makes them feel good. And so I think my responsibility as a church leader is is for those that are uncomfortable with church, who don't normally come, I want to make them as comfortable as possible. And for those who are comfortable with church, I have to try and push them to be uncomfortable, to step out of what they know, so that their trust and reliance on God increases. And that's a scary place. Yeah, and I understand that. And so people are not always going to do that.
Yeah, a long time ago, I remember chatting with Mark Mittelberg, who was oversaw the evangelism at Willow Creek, and he talked about the law of spiritual entropy. In other words, you know, there's this, we're constantly coming back to ourselves if we're not careful. And he was advocating at that point having a champion for evangelism, or someone to over, you know, make sure that that goal continued to be met. So.
Yeah,
so sounds good. You talked about your influences, Willow Creek being one. So for listeners unaware, Willow Creek is a church over in Chicago, which has had some influence on UK church and continues to do so through the Willow Creek Association.
That's right.
Other influences, Steve, and books or resources that have helped you?
Yeah, sure. So we have also linked with another church out in another two churches, in fact, out in the States. That we've been kind of building relationship with. One is a church called North Point Community Church with a guy called Andy Stanley.
Yeah.
So we've been out to conferences at their church, and we've got to know some of the people out there. And they are so generous in sharing resources and of wanting to encourage us.
Atlanta, Georgia?
Yeah, in Atlanta, Georgia. Yeah. That's right, yes. That's right. So North Point Community Church. And he is just a brilliant communicator and a brilliant leader. So I'd listen to his podcasts and that kind of stuff, along with Bill Hybels as well. There's another church called Christian Community Church, which is just outside of Chicago in a place called Naperville. And again, we've been across to meet with their leaders to talk about the multi-site approach of one church, multiple locations. And so, again, they've been incredibly kind in sharing resources with us. Now, their numbers are huge, as in with all three of those churches. And so we have to try and contextualize them to village life. But but they have been incredibly helpful. One of the key books, which for me has just been brilliant, is, and I would recommend any church leader to read it, it's a book called Deep and Wide by Andy Stanley. And that's Creating Churches Unchurched People Love to Attend. That's shaped us and shaped our language hugely. I think the Courageous Leadership of Bill Hybels, again, that's another one. It's more whole church, but it's having that courage to make the big decisions. The book Communicating for a Change by Andy Stanley and Lane Jones, again, another North Point resource. They've been very influential in how we operate as a church, and has helped to give us language that we can communicate with. So, yeah, very grateful to all of them.
Oh, thank you, Steve. Well, if you're searching for a pen, those books again are Deep and Wide, Andy Stanley. Communicating for a Change, Andy Stanley, and there was another author there. Wasn't
Lane it? Jones.
Lane Jones. And then Courageous Leadership, which has been around a little while, by Bill Hybels.
Yeah.
So thanks, Steve. Yeah. And it's lovely to hear, Steve, enthusiasm in the rural areas. I know that rural areas around the country have been increasing in numbers as you know, people have moved out of cities to some degree, but typically church life has been a bit mixed, and certainly those who've been involved in rural evangelism have found it a bit of a struggle, particularly in small rural churches. So great to hear of a place where this has been buoyant. Any particular things you'd say about rural evangelism and village life that might be key for listeners who are in those kind of rural areas?
I mean, certainly I have a passion for rural life and villages. I grew up on a farm, and I've moved all of 2.2 miles. So I've been out doing other work in other parts of the country, but I still live very close to where I was born. And so my heart is for Suffolk, and my heart is for villages in Suffolk. I think in order to be able to really establish, I think you have to be strategic in looking at growing villages. I think where there's a village of 300, it's very hard to establish the prospect of a vibrant, growing church when there's such a small community. So Debenham, where our church meets, would probably be about 2,000 in size. and Thurston is probably heading towards 3,000. So we want to be strategic in where we go, so that it's a growing population. And actually, much of it, I think, comes down to having great leaders around yourself. I cannot tell you how grateful I am to God for the people that he's put around me. They are brilliant. And the great thing is they just make me look good. where actually it's them. And so I think if we could, if in any church, but certainly within a rural community, you've often got very gifted people who have moved out to the country but still live within the city. And I would say just grab those people and make best use of their leadership and of their strategic understanding. Because it doesn't just happen. I think we have to work as if it all depends on us and pray as it all depends on God. Yes. And so therefore, I think just leaders should surround themselves with other great leaders to make it work and make it happen.
Well, Steve, you're very gracious and humble, but it's been terrific to chat with you. So thank you so much.
I've loved it. I really appreciate the opportunity.
Well, thank you. You'll be listening to Leadership Fire with Steve Fenning, the senior leader of Forge Community Church in Stowmarket in Suffolk. Do log on to Premier's own website. You can find archive recordings of Leadership Fire, including this one, in due course. I look forward to your company again next Sunday at 3:30. Thanks for tuning in.
You've been listening to The Leadership File on Premier. Andy Peck serves as a tutor at CWR, a Christian charity whose courses and publications aim to apply God's Word to everyday life. Contact him via email apeck@cwr.org.uk.